here with this week's hottest stories in the investment world. This is Zach's Friday Finish Line.
Hello, and welcome to the Zach's Friday Finish Line. I am Ryan McQueenie, a content writer here at Zach's, along with one of our editors, Maddie Johnson.
Hello, today is Friday, January 26th, and we're here to recap this week's biggest stories from the investment and financial world. We are officially waist deep in earnings reports, and we'll be getting to the latest results from the likes of Netflix, Starbucks, and Intel later in this show. But first, we want to give a quick recap on a company we talked about last week, and that's General Electric.
Yeah, that's right. GE reported this week as well. So getting into more earnings reports later, but just wanted to bring up GE again, missing bottom line estimates of 28 cents per share by a penny. Quarterly revenues were $3.14 billion. That fell short.
31.4.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, my bad. 31.4 billion. 3.14 would be really bad.
Yeah, that would be really bad. Then we'd be like, GE.
31.4 billion. That fell short of our estimate of 32.9 billion. Of course, recently installed CEO John Flannery has called 2018 a quote-unquote reset year, and the company is now seeking to reduce corporate costs by $2 billion, laying off around 12,000 workers. I heard they're rolling back, slash maybe even eliminating altogether the corporate jets. So,
oh man,
yeah, a real travesty.
Yeah, so last week we covered the company's possible plans to split, to break up its conglomerate makeup into many pieces. And these results likely underscore, they really underscore how bad it's gotten. But pivoting a bit to something outside of earnings, we had some interesting news and new developments this week from the Trump administration. We haven't talked about this guy in a while.
It has been a minute.
That could end up having an effect on some key American industries.
Yes, it was kind of a twofer tariff from the Trump administration this week. Trump instituting a 20% tariff on the first 1.2 million imported, again, emphasis on 1.2 million imported large residential washing machines in the first year of the policy. So,
my washing machine that I use?
If it's a large residential washing machine and you're buying a new one after this tariff goes into place, it will have a 20% tariff if it was within the first 1.2 million imported in the first year for the large residential washing machines above the first 1.2, there is a 50% tariff.
Interesting. So
very specific to large residential washing machines. The tariff, as I said, was kind of a twofer. The other side of things was a new 30% tariff on imported solar panel components, the kind of cells that make up the panels. That declines incrementally and eventually gets to 15% by the fourth year of the policy. And in this case, the first 2.5 gigawatts worth of imported solar cells are actually exempt from these tariffs during this new agreement. So, as you can imagine, having an effect on the kind of relevant companies, shares of U.S. solar energy stocks actually climbed on Tuesday morning following the Monday afternoon announcement of the tariffs. And of course, domestic appliance companies like Whirlpool Corporation also gained. So the tariffs really for a company like Whirlpool are going to help it compete with Asian competitors like Samsung and LG, two of the bigger importers of, well, large residential washing machines. And interesting thing to note there, however, it's not just helping Whirlpool compete, but from what I think the Trump administration would say is kind of a pro or a benefit of this type of tariff is that it's supposed to help create jobs. So Whirlpool announcing that it's going to add jobs to a factory in Ohio. But another interesting thing that this could help kind of facilitate is Samsung and LG have recently been looking to bring some manufacturing of appliances to the United States. And when there's a tariff on imported machines, you would think that kind of adds even more benefit for them to come build manufacturing facilities here. Of course, Samsung executives came out in opposition to this tariff, but just wanted to highlight some interesting ways to look at how the tariff has an effect on those competitors. And then on the solar side of things, companies like First Solar, which is a Tempe, Arizona-based solar cell manufacturer who manufactures a good portion of its solar cells here in the United States, should be able to better compete with international rivals. But we saw a lot of impact kind of across the board in the solar industry on Tuesday morning. And that had a lot to do with kind of expectations versus reality. So, you know, one company that was kind of up in the wake of the tariff was Sunrun. This is actually one of the biggest residential solar companies in the U.S. So these are the people that are coming to your place of residence and installing a whole system. So they put the panels in for you and they
hook like the put the panels on the roof.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. Currently a Zacks ranked number one strong buy stock. And although Sunrun's CEO came out against the tariff, claiming it would harm U.S. solar energy jobs, his company stock actually popped because the new policy was not as devastating to installers as was once anticipated. So this, in the solar industry specifically, this tariff has been kind of anticipated for quite a long time. And getting the specifics of it now kind of seemed like the initial reaction was like, okay, maybe this isn't as bad as we thought, and could actually maybe lead to some interesting pricing competition for installers to get more competitive rates from their suppliers. Of course, kind of the direct opposite to that is the concern that this does hurt a lot of like Chinese manufacturers in particular. It was another kind of sign from the Trump administration that specifically Chinese manufacturers are kind of I wouldn't say an enemy, but it's a whole part of that America First rhetoric.
Sure.
And with a tariff like this to the tune of 50% on some washing machines, you're seeing that come really into effect there. Moving on from tariffs, wow, tariffs aren't really the most exciting as a interesting macroeconomic concept that you cover in like the first day of junior year of high school economics class, but here we are learning about it in real life. We're going to move on to one of our favorite companies on the show, and that was the earnings report earlier this week from Netflix.
Yeah, so on Monday, Netflix released its Q4 2017 financial results. They posted earnings of 41 cents per share, which matched the Zacks consensus of 41 cents. Netflix also saw revenue figures of $3.29 billion, which just topped our estimate of $3.28 billion. And Netflix's Q4 sales climbed 32.6% year over year, and earnings were more than doubled the 15% per share posted in the year ago period. Now, Netflix also added 8.3 million new subscribers in Q4, which marked a 15% jump from the year-ago period and also represented the biggest quarter in the company's history. Netflix originally predicted it would also add a total of 6.3 million new subscribers in the fourth quarter, and the company added 6.36 million new international memberships alone. So on the back of Netflix's incredible results, shares of the company, which were already trading near the all-time high in the buildup to the report, are up nearly 20%. The company surged past a market cap of $100 billion for the first time. It is now even above $110 billion.
Really?
As we speak.
So. Yeah, another impressive quarter from Netflix. Interesting to note, just matching our consensus earnings estimate, had actually missed estimates in the previous two quarters, ending a multi-year streak of beating estimates. So kind of getting back into line there a little bit.
And Netflix, I know, raised their rates in December. Mm-hmm. It's now $10.99 a month. And I think content, too, has gotten a little bit better, even though there's like more of it, like Netflix original content. And so I don't really know like what the difference is between like the correlations between quarter and quarter. All I know is that I don't really want to unsubscribe from my Netflix account like I used to, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
All I know is I'm ready for House of Cards,
yeah,
the final season with Who? Robin Wright.
Incredible.
Incredible. Taking over the lead.
I will say that directly on your point about content, Reed Hastings in the earnings call touched, really focused on that topic in direct response to a question about raising the prices. I think it went from like $9.99 to $10.99,
yeah,
basically
like
$10 to $11. They said that new money, that new revenue is going directly to content generation. And I also wanted to bring up, they talked a lot about Bright, which was the movie with Will Smith.
Oh, the bad one?
Yeah. So they kind of directly addressed that as well about it being, how do you put it, not critically well received. And they said...
But like word of mouth buzz, I think helped people, like a lot of people watched it.
Yeah, definitely. That's exactly what Hastings was saying, was that, you know, for us, sometimes our content isn't going to work with critics, but if it resonates with our audience, then that's really all that matters.
Right. And on the other side of that, you have a movie like Mudbound, which Netflix picked up at Sundance last year and is now, I believe, like a four-time Oscar nominee this year. So you have Mary J. Blige in supporting actress. You have Mary J. Blige again for best original song. Rachel Morrison for cinematography. That could actually only be three. So maybe only three Oscar nominations, but still
only,
like...
Only, though.
Only, just, though. I mean, it's good. Still amazing.
Yeah. So they can do the critically well-received movies.
Right.
As
and
well,
this too. Is, I think this is also Netflix's first original movie, so to speak, that has been able to like breach, if you will, the Academy line. Amazon has been able to do it in the past, like last year with Manchester by the Sea. So, I mean, kudos to them for seeing the promise of that film last year at Sundance. So hopefully more of that to come.
On the exact opposite side of things, a movie that will be winning no awards, maybe some Razzies. Bright was their most expensive movie to date as far as money poured into it. And yeah, they had good things to say about it. Obviously, I guess, you know, they understand how well it worked from a business side of things a little bit better than we would know. Interesting.
Is there going to be a sequel? I feel like there's probably going to be a sequel.
I'm not
going to. Maybe without Will Smith, but...
Well, we'll see, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know.
They certainly seem to think they have the money for trying out all sorts
of
Well,
another
types of
question,
content.
When is all the Disney content going to be gone?
Slowly but surely over the next year was my understanding of it.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to be one wave, but I think it'll be...
Because there's a ton of Disney content on Netflix right now.
Things kind of leaving step
like
by step.
Like a ton.
Oh, yeah.
Like the new Pirates of the Caribbean movie, which I watched.
Was it good?
No.
Okay.
But it was enjoyable.
Well,
you know, it was fine.
Yeah, that's all
there was. A beautiful Orlando Bloom and Keira Knightley reunion at the end.
What is this?
Spoiler, no spoiler
one?
Alert, because it's been out for a while.
Sixth one or fifth one?
I think it's the fifth. Who knows at this point?
Anyway,
there's going to be at least five more.
Yeah.
So,
all right. So, moving on here from Netflix, which was on Monday, to a report that just came in yesterday afternoon, Thursday afternoon. Intel, still in the tech sector, but obviously on the semiconductor side of things, Intel reported fourth quarter fiscal 2017 results. Earnings were $1.08 per share, beating our consensus of 86 cents per share by quite a large margin there. However, factoring in a charge related to the recent tax reform bill, Intel posted a GAAP loss of 15 cents per share in the quarter. Another one of the major tech companies we've seen with a remarkably different GAAP versus non-GAAP results kind of picture there. Intel reported revenue figures of $17.05 billion, and that beat our consensus estimate of $16.31 billion. Intel said that excluding McAfee, fourth quarter revenue grew 8% year over year, and data-centric, quote-unquote data-centric revenue was up 21% year over year. Breaking things down a little bit more, revenues in the client computing group were $9 billion. That was down 2%. While revenues in the data center group were $5.6 billion, and that was up 20%. Looking at the CEO, who I will have you note is under investigation by Congress, or was asked to be put under investigation. I don't know if they actually launched an inquiry yet because of his buying and selling some securities of some of his own stock before that all came out into the public.
So
some possible insider trading questions going on there. I don't know all the facts, so I'll just leave it at that. I just know that there was a congressman who asked that an inquiry be launched.
So you're spilling the tea.
A little bit. He had, of course, plenty of comments today. Rack recorder this, rack recorder that, yada, yada, yada. I had more interest in finding out what the company was willing to say about the security flaw. And if you dug into the press release a little bit in the forward-looking statements section of it, which for anyone who's actually read a lot of these earnings report press releases, the forward-looking statements thing is a lot of like legal mumbo-jumbo, some just various industry jargon depending on who it is. You're not typically getting it. It's more disclaimers, like a terms and conditions thing that you just check the box and say you agree to, but don't actually read it. But I wanted to see what they were willing to say about this security flaw thing that we've covered on the show. Everyone's probably heard about by now. And they addressed it in that forward-looking statements area. And I wanted to pull this quote from there. So it says, quote, "We have and may continue to face product claims, litigation, and adverse publicity and customer relations from security vulnerabilities and or mitigation techniques, including as a result of side channel exploits such as Spectre and Meltdown, which could adversely impact our results of operations, customer relationships, and reputation," end quote. Spectre and Meltdown being the weird hardware flaws that we attempted to explain in layman's terms on the show. I don't know how well we did, but some sort of weird hardware flaw in like most CPUs made within the past decade could allow hackers to get unauthorized access to people's computers. So obviously a lot more to digest from Intel in that regard in the future. Looking ahead though, the company does expect first quarter revenues of $15 billion and earnings of 70 cents per share. And then looking even further ahead, Intel projects full year 2018 revenues of $65 billion and earnings of $3.55 per share. The first quarter outlook was a little bit below our consensus, our current consensus estimates. We had previously been looking at a consensus of 73 cents per share and revenues of $15.05 billion. So wouldn't be surprised if analysts maybe revised downward to match the company's outlook. However, on the full year side of things, our consensus estimates were both lower. So possibly some positive revisions to come on that end. Decent report from Intel, certainly. Again, that security flaw is going to be something that they'll be dealing with the ramifications for more drawn out in the long term, but current outlook looking decent nonetheless. So that's Intel. We want to move on to one final earnings report from a consumer staple, if you would.
Yes, the only consumer staple in my heart, Starbucks. They released their first quarter fiscal 2018 results on Thursday, and non-GAAP earnings of 65 cents per share beat our consensus estimate of 57 cents per share. And that 65 cents included a 7 cents benefit from the U.S. tax law change. Mm. Revenues came in at $6 billion, but that missed our consensus estimate of $6.14 billion. But it grew 6% to hit a new record for Q1. So they were... company was very proud of that. That is quite the achievement. Mm-hmm. And Starbucks said that global comparable store sales increased 2% thanks to a 2% increase in average ticket. And I'm not going to say that's because of me buying more expensive latte macchiatos than average.
Yeah.
But, you know,
could
what
be
can
that.
You say? In the Americas, in the U.S., comp store sales also grew 2%, while China comp store sales increased 6% thanks to a 6% increase in transactions. Also in the U.S., active membership in Starbucks Rewards grew 11% to 14.2 million, with member spending representing 37% of U.S. company-operated sales. And finally, mobile order and pay represented 11% of the company's U.S. company-operated transactions. So another quarter of growth in mobile order and pay and active membership in Starbucks Rewards. But I also wanted to note that their global comparable store sales, I guess, missed analyst estimates. So the consensus estimate was actually for 3% growth. So that's probably why the stock was down a little bit over 3% after an after-hours trading on Thursday.
All right. Cool. But, interesting to note. A record quarter, but still a little bit disappointing maybe in some ways.
Yeah. And also wanted to note the big Crate and Barrel on Michigan Avenue finally closed its doors. So that means the Starbucks flagship Reserve mm-hmm. is getting ready for construction.
Oh, is that where it's going?
That's where it's going.
Amazing. That's cool.
It's going to be amazing and just and huge. Like, can you imagine like a four-story Starbucks on Michigan Avenue?
I cannot,
and from like the mock-ups that I've seen on the internet, like there's going to be like a rooftop terrace. You can like literally drink coffee.
Is there going to be alcohol there?
I'm assuming so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not to sound like I need alcohol to,
like right now.
Go to a thing, but that makes it a little bit more fun, I think, for everyone involved.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Starbucks, interesting quarter. 6% comps growth in China, you said?
That's 6% comps growth in China. And in the CEO quote, he mentioned that the U.S. and China were their two biggest regions, and they're pushing growth there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, that just about does it for us this week, covering everything from GE to Netflix, Intel, Starbucks, and the new Trump tariffs. If you feel that we missed anything, or if you want us to cover a different story, remember that you can just shoot us an email at podcast@zacks.com. Remember to check out all of our other exclusive audio content at zacks.com/podcasts. And please remember to subscribe and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts if you enjoyed the show. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you next time on the Zacks Friday Finish Line.